Prepare yourselves for Ethan and Aaron's Confessions of a Movie Snob, the ongoing discussion of film genres.
Welcome to the podcast. This is Aaron, and with me, as always, is the man, the legend, a guy that I guarantee you he strangled at least one hooker in his lifetime, Ethan Parker.
Thank you. I was acquitted, so.
I didn't say that. I didn't say that part of it. But tonight is just us again. And
yep.
Although we are wearing headphones, so we're doing it over Skype because of Ethan being a PA on some job and having to work overnight. And
yes.
He didn't want to drive, and I don't blame him.
No, yes. And I'm going off 3.5 hours, 3.5 hours sleep today. So after being up for 26 hours.
Never fun.
No, but it's a good experience, and I'm getting paid. So, you know.
Yay, money and experience, two best
yep.
things in life. But what will be fun, I think, is going to be tonight's show, because we have a couple of things going on. First off, at the end of the show, we do have the announcement of who the Ruthaus winner this time around is.
Oh yeah,
and that's good stuff. I've told the Bag and Board boys aren't going to be on there, but I've talked to them about it, and I kind of have some reactions from them. So we'll go from there. And then after that, before we do any of that, our main topic discussion is one that I often say comes across organically, and this is one I felt was really organic, because we often say, you know, oh, back when we did such and such an episode, I would have, if I had it to do over again, I would do, you know, X or whatever. And I think the one that Ethan and I both say that the most often about was back in the day. I think it was our 18th or 19th episode of the Red Phone Zone, where we did our
yeah.
top six favorite directors. And this is one that should be good, because they're some of the people that at least you and I pay the most attention to on a movie set. I mean, obviously there's the performers, but we also do pay attention to the directors.
Oh yeah, well that's something I always look at in the trailer, is who directed the movie, and sometimes you're surprised as hell about it. You know, it's like, holy crap,
mm-hmm.
He directed that? Crikey, mm-hmm. you know. So
right, and it's fun, but there's definitely some directors out there, and they definitely have their own stamp that they like to throw on to.
I mean, it's the way we learned that, you know, Catherine Bigelow directed Point Break.
Yeah, it's fun. that's actually some of the most fun stuff about directors, is the retrospective stuff. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's always fun to go back and say, you know, holy crap, Steven Spielberg directed Duel, or, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's fun. It'll be good times. But before we get into any of that, we have a segment that we like to call Geekly Happenings, news relevant to us geeks. We didn't do a show last week, and there's been some stuff happening in the news, but
mm-hmm.
nothing huge.
A few things. A lot of little things have been happening here and there. The first thing I've got is, of course, the RoboCop remake that is of course, looming. Sony Pictures has decided they're going to distribute it, and sort of right on the heels of that is they have already set a release date for it of August 9th, 2013. So they're...
They're moving forward on that.
Yeah, I mean, they've got Joel Kinnaman as the title role, and they're working on it now. They've got obviously got the director, the Jose Padilla.
Yeah.
So we'll see, I suppose. I'm still firmly don't think it needs to be remade, but you know, I'm not going to lie, I'll probably see it. So.
No, I mean, to me, it just depends on what it looks like. I mean.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really trying to calm down about the whole remake thing, because I, you know, just because this RoboCop remake comes out, it doesn't make the original go away, which is
good. Oh, yeah, 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 and you sort of have to really get that into your head. It's like that just because they do something like this, if they make a sequel, they make a prequel, it's not going to ruin the original for you. So, I mean,
that's kind of a thesis of our show, really.
Oh, yeah, you've been saying it about Star Wars forever, and you know, it's something that a lot of people don't get, and you know, I'll even admit I haven't gotten it a few times, and
oh, sure.
and but you know, I'm coming around. I came around.
Well, me too. I mean sometimes I'm just like, you know, what the fuck, why are they making this? But you know, my reaction to it is I don't see it, so therefore, you know,
yeah.
You know, that's pretty much where it ends for me. I think that some people need, I mean, I don't need to toot, I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but I think more people need to do it like me. They say, that's a horrible idea, I'm not going to see it. Not
exactly.
I'm going to go see it, and I'm going to tear this apart every, you know, no, I'm not going to do that. That's why we have four Transformers movies.
Yeah.
And people keep go seeing them.
And we've done I think we did a top six remakes episode.
Yeah.
I don't think we've done a sequels episode yet.
No, we haven't. That'd be a good one. There's some damn good sequels out there.
We'll have to put that on the list.
Mm-hmm. We did a remakes with McGee.
Yep, with McGee. That's right. That's right. And you know how we keep going back to all these board game being made into movies with obviously Battleship, hey, Liam fucking Neeson.
Can I stop you real quick?
Go right ahead.
Because we have something that can be a little bit more organic than, you know, getting into the board game movies, because we're about the RoboCop musical.
Ah, yes. Yeah, I remember reading something about that. It's some improv comedy group in... I want to say it's in Detroit, it's in Michigan or Illinois or somewhere. They've done a RoboCop the musical, very, you know, campy, low budget spoof, and they've got a Kickstarter going to raise money for an official soundtrack.
Yeah, I'll throw some money that way.
Yeah, it looks pretty funny actually. It didn't look like their Kickstarter was doing too well, unfortunately.
No.
But I'd be at least intrigued to actually see this RoboCop the musical someday.
I would too. I mean, if Evil Dead the musical turned out as well as it did, and mm-hmm. some of these musicals that just seem so like Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah,
I think that turned out really well. But who the hell would think that that movie would translate as well as it did into a musical? So
yeah,
you know, I mean, I'm certainly not going to write it off because it's, you know, oh my God, it's RoboCop but a musical. What the fuck? No, it's an intriguing idea to me.
Yeah, and it's sort of like going with that, the whole remake thing is what I want to see is something that actually, you know, has some reverence at least for the original. And so, you know, it isn't the original's there, but we're going to do it better. It's like, well, no, the original was great and we love it and we're doing our own thing, but we still love the original type of thing. So, and
exactly.
this RoboCop the musical sort of feels that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it does.
Mm-hmm. But as I was saying about board games, you know, with that Battleship coming out and various other, you know, shoots and ladders and all that, that the on-again, off-again Ouija, based on the board game from Hasbro of, you know, a Ouija board, is now back on track at Universal.
What about the Witchboard movies?
You know, I don't know. They're working on that.
The Witchboard movies, there was... I want to say two or three of them, and they were effectively Ouija board movies. I mean, they weren't Hasbro mm-hmm. Ouija board, but they were called Witch Board, and that's exactly what they were about.
Well, these are official. This is officially the Hasbro one, so well,
you know what? This could be cool.
Yeah. I mean, Deadline is saying that the film. This is sort of the funny part. The original was planned for a $100 million budget.
Jesus.
Is now targeting a significantly more modest $5 million budget.
Well, that's quite a dip.
It sounds like some executive went, wait, you want to make a movie based on what? No. We're not going to put $100 million into that.
I bet you $5 right now that whatever. Let's say that we're gonna side on. I'm gonna err on the side of caution here. I'm gonna say that this movie might not be made, but if it is made, I'd be willing to throw a $5 bet down right now that it won't be called Ouija.
I wouldn't doubt that.
Because nobody knows how to spell it, because it's, I don't even know how to spell it, and I have one. It's Ouija or something like that.
Yeah, you got it.
So.
And with a $5 million budget, I think what they're going to be going for is like Paranormal Activity type of thing. It's,
really?
You know, that sort of found footage or something along those lines.
They can make a half-assed decent, horror movie for $5 million.
Well, yeah.
You know, they just need to have like a really lean budget, and they need to not fuck around. They don't need to be casting Russell Crowe in it or anything stupid like that. I mean, it could be cool. I mean, it's an intriguing enough idea to where it could turn into a good movie. I mean, not like, I don't know, Stretch Armstrong.
And they'll get
I look at it, I just don't see that being a good movie.
And they'll get Justin Lin to direct it, no matter what.
Yeah, probably.
But apparently
Bradley Cooper to play the Ouija board.
Yes. Apparently it's being set up through Platinum Dunes. Was originally the original one, the $100 million one, I guess, was scripted by Edward Kitsis and Adam Horowitz, with Simon Kinberg rewriting it. And then I think last November it says Marty Noxon came aboard to rewrite it last year. But yeah.
Huh.
So we shall see. But we've also talked a little bit here and there about Bill and Ted 3.
Yep.
the super duper excellent adventure. Apparently the script for it is complete, and both leading actors have confirmed. Keanu Reeves, I know Keanu Reeves is probably the hard one. The other guy's like, sure, I'm not doing anything.
Alex Winter.
Yeah, I think last I checked, he sold real estate or something like that.
Something like that, yeah. I
mean, so I'm sure he's like, okay.
you know, maybe living off some of that Bill and Ted residual. He's exactly. also in The Lost Boys.
Oh, that. I mean, yep, you're right. I forgot. I forgot about that.
He probably has a little bit of residuals coming mm-hmm. in every month. I doubt he's starving, but
no,
yeah,
I bet he probably makes convention appearances or something too.
Totally. That seems like something like that would do. I'm not opposed to this. I like the. Mm-hmm. I like the. My only thing is George Carlin's dead now.
Yeah.
So they won't have him for Rufus, but.
Yeah. Well, as far as I understand, it's sort of them. At the age that they would be now, deciding to embrace their destiny and write the song that saves the world or something like that.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, if done right, it would be. I think it'd be a lot of fun. I haven't watched the original one in forever.
I watched the second one not too long ago mm-hmm. because so is it William? Yeah, William Atherton. His death was fucking hilarious. You sunk my battleship.
Yes,
it was funny. I liked that movie. And Station. You mean all kinds of horrible 80s tropes going on.
Oh, yeah.
Still enjoyed it.
Yeah. And both you and I loved The Muppets. Speaking of nostalgia and the 80s and all that. Apparently, Disney is moving forward with a sequel for it, obviously, because it was a big hit. But because
Jason
of...
Siegel's not involved, right?
Yeah, Jason Siegel's not involved. But from what I'm reading, it doesn't seem like they're cutting him out completely. It's just he doesn't have time to do it.
Right, absolutely. I follow him on Twitter, and he talked a little bit about it.
Yeah.
He didn't have time, and he also didn't really... Yeah, he said that his goal with the Muppets was to, you know, make like a really cool, nostalgic Muppet movie and bring it back into the limelight. He's done that. And, you know, at the same time, the only ongoing continuity in between the Muppets movies was the Muppets. It was never the humans in it. So mm-hmm. that's absolutely fine.
Yeah, well, apparently the director, James Bobbin, and writer, and the other writer, Nicholas Stoller, are set to return, though, so...
Good.
So I'm not, you know, I think I almost want to make it clear that they're, you know, it's not Disney ousting Jason Siegel. It's, you know, Jason Siegel's just a busy guy. And I think he says that his goal was to bring the Muppets back and that he did it, leaving them in good hands, his writing partner and James Bobbin, the director. So he said all he wanted to do was set the stage for them to do whatever they wanted and what he set out to do. And now I want to pursue more human related projects. So. No hard feelings. It sounds like so. It's not at all. It's not like Marvel Studios Edward Norton or Skippy the Wonderful
Terrence Howard.
Yeah, the Wonder Idiot from Iron Man.
Yeah.
Oh
well.
Yeah.
But you know, there's still, you know, I mean, that story kind of has a negative bent on it, but at the same time, there's a fucking Muppets sequel coming out. That's cool.
I'm totally
awesome.
I really
like The Muppets. I think that was my number 3, number 4 movie of the year when we did that at the end of the year.
Oh, it was
awesome. I really enjoyed it. Hell yeah.
On the same line, apparently the Henson Studios is still its own entity. They just can't use The Muppets or The Muppet title. Apparently they're working on their own Muppet, quote unquote, but it's a puppet movie. It doesn't have the Muppets in it or anything. I don't know if they actually have a title for it quite yet, but it's a Muppet murder movie, sort of set in the vein of Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
It's not Avenue Q, is it?
No. It's set in the vein of Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Like a
universe that has human actors and puppet actors, and the puppets are like second class citizens. There's a murder, that sort of thing, and apparently Brian Henson's going to direct it. So I mean, I'm intrigued at least.
Yeah, well, cool. Sounds good to me. I mean, they do a lot of good work. They do a lot of good work. I mean, in forever, there's been talk about sequels to like Labyrinth and some follow ups to Fraggle Rock and. Just stuff like that, but you know,
and the perpetually in limbo Dark Crystal sequel,
right?
That's been developing for in development hell for 20 years now.
So, cool. I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad, because they've given us some great stuff over the years.
Yep. And I mentioned several shows back about the Alfred Hitchcock biopic, the Alfred Hitchcock and the Making of Psycho with Anthony Hopkins as Alfred Hitchcock. Apparently, Scarlett Johansson and James D'Arcy have signed on to play Psycho stars Janet Leigh and Anthony Perkins in the movie.
Yes.
Which I think is pretty cool.
It's very good, yeah.
And it's an adaptation of a book by Stephen Rebello.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the cast now has it as Sasha Gervasi, who did Anvil, The Story of Anvil, will direct the movie. And it's obviously stars Anthony Hopkins as Hitchcock. And Helen Mirren is going to be playing his wife, Alma Revel.
Yes.
So
that sounds like a cool movie.
Yep. And it's the story's been
done right. If it's done right, this might be Anthony Hopkins' next Oscar.
That would be nice. It's co-wrote by the script is being adapted by the guy who did John McLaughlin, who did Black Swan. So it's co-writer on Black Swan.
Yeah?
So
excellent.
It's got a lot going for it. I'm intrigued. Yeah.
Me too. Subject matter alone. I mean, it would take a hell of a shitty production team for me to not to be interested in this, and it doesn't have that, so I'm very intrigued.
I am, however, kind of flabbergasted, but apparently Paramount Pictures has brought aboard the town screenwriter Peter Craig to draft a sequel to Top Gun.
Yeah.
So the original film, directed by Tony Scott, starred Tom Cruise, etc. Last year, Cruise confirmed that he's been in talks with Scott and producer Jerry Bruckheimer about reprising the role of Maverick. It was also confirmed last year that the original film is undergoing a 3D conversion and will be released theatrically sometime this year.
Neat.
So not only are we getting, I think it was re-released in theaters briefly for its anniversary, and now it's coming back as 3D, and now a sequel. So, alrighty, interesting.
Cool.
So the movie's not bad.
Fuck no, I like Top Gun a lot. I'm just kind of curious if Maverick's going to be flying and shit.
Yeah.
Because I don't care how good he is. Tom Cruise is almost 50, if not more than 50. He would not still be a fighter pilot at that age.
Oh, God, no.
No, but hey, we'll
see
what happens.
Yeah, that's going to be a challenge. That's definitely going to be a challenge for it, yeah. And have you heard of the movie/book/BBC miniseries called Day of the Triffids?
Yes, I have.
Apparently, Sam Raimi is putting on his producer hat for a new version of the 1951 novel of Day of the Triffids, which established the writer of the novel, John Wyndham, as one of the most important science fiction writers of his era, quote-unquote.
Yes.
Raimi and, of course, Rob Tappert are co-producing the movie through Ghost House Pictures in conjunction with the Mark Gordon Company. Neil Cross, who wrote the upcoming horror film Mama and did some work off the script of Pacific Rim for Guillermo del Toro, has landed the job for writing the screenplay, and director has yet to be named. Day of the Triffids is one of those kind of surreal type of horror. It's not really... I'm reluctant to call it a horror film, you know? It's very strange.
Yeah, it's oddball like that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's definitely, I mean, you mentioned Little Shop of Horrors, and it's sort of in that kind of vein, I suppose, to an extent. But it's a weird one, especially the old BBC miniseries. That was random.
Yes, it was.
Oh, well.
It was good, though.
And you said you saw Chronicle, right?
Yeah.
And did you like it?
It was all right.
All right. Well, you know they're doing they're working on a sequel.
I'm not surprised. It'd be pretty easy.
The writer is coming back to do the sequel. But Josh Trank, apparently the director, is apparently in talks to direct a feature film based on Venom. So this is more talk about a Venom movie. I know that came up back when Spider-Man 3 came out and was a big thing, and then went away because Spider-Man 3 was kind of disappointing.
I can be completely wrong with this, but I'm almost positive that the Venom movie died not because of that, but because Topher Grace didn't want to do it.
Yeah. I don't remember, honestly.
Yeah, that's I swear I remember him saying no, he didn't want to do it. I'm like, who the fuck are you to turn down anything? You know, the 70s show isn't on anymore, and you know, but whatever. Yeah, I you know what? I don't want to see a Venom movie. I don't like Venom, but
yeah,
I'm in the minority. So I hope it comes out. I hope people love it.
Oh yeah.
So
Speaking of love, I'm a big fan of the TV series 24. And the movie,
I've never watched it.
It's a good show. You gotta sort of marathon it, and like about season 6 is probably the best one. Season 6, season 7, something like that. And then the last season is okay, but it ends on a cliffhanger. But they did that on purpose. And they've been trying to develop a movie to sort of wrap up the story and do that, because it was a big hit and
sure.
and everything. But it keeps getting sort of put on hold, and it's been put on hold again. So
yeah, I saw something about Keith Sutherland being pissed.
Yes,
like he was like going on a Twitter rant or something about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Apparently, it's planned to continue. The movie's planned to continue right off the series finale, jumping forward in time by about 6 months, and then the show will be set over a 24-hour period. But of course, will not actually play out in real time like the series, because that would be a long movie.
A 24-hour movie.
Yes. I mean, they were talking about a start date like in April or May of this year, and now it's not going to happen. So we're going to see what happens. Apparently, it's been written by Mark Bomback and Billy Ray.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I like the series. It's a good show.
And I've heard it's good. I just never watched it.
Yeah, it's
is it on Netflix or Hulu or anything like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, last I checked, it was the entire show was on Netflix.
Cool, I'll check it out sometime. I just haven't watched it. It has nothing to do with, I think it looks bad. I just haven't watched it.
No. I really enjoy it. It is one of those that you sort of have to marathon it, because it's obviously, because it's the 24 hours, 24 episodes, and you sort of... I found when I was watching it that if you watched it week after week, you sort of forgot things and whatnot.
Sure.
So.
I do know that Dwight Schrute from The Office is a big fan of Jack Bauer.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'll like him, too.
Maybe. Let's see. Robert Rodriguez mentioned in an interview that he's going to start shooting the sequel to Machete this year, Machete Kills. In April, and then
space after that.
After that, he says the massively delayed Sin City 2 should start production over the summer. So, obviously, they were asking him about casting and all that, and he didn't say much of anything, except that he plans on, you know, trying to cast to the quality of the first movie. So,
I know that Mickey Rourke didn't. Mickey Rourke said he might do it.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember right.
Like, I understand one of the stories they were talking about doing was the Bruce Willis character. A story of him before, like a prequel of him before, before he had his heart problem and whatnot. So, I mean, that might be interesting.
Yeah.
And then there was another.
I really, really like that movie. I haven't seen it in a while.
And then there was talk about. One of the stories being that Jessica Alba's character going for revenge for the death of Bruce Willis's character. So,
right.
We'll see.
There's also the Lady Kills or whatever it was called.
A Dame to Kill For.
A Dame to Kill For, and they were talking Angelina Jolie for that role.
So. Yeah, that's not going to happen now. I'm sure.
But probably not.
Yeah,
probably not.
So
cool, good stuff.
Apparently, this is some interesting stuff. Paramount Pictures has rearranged its schedule, its upcoming schedule for this year and into next year, setting up new dates for its film One Shot and the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. And they're also delaying World War Z until next summer. World War Z was supposed to come out at Christmas.
Next year?
This year. It's now delayed until June 21st of next year. So it's getting like a 6-month pushback. Let's see.
Didn't they happen to Green Lantern?
Green Lantern? I don't know if it.
No.
Superman.
I was thinking about the 0-hour budget increase on the Green Lantern. Superman was the one that had the 6-month push.
Yes. Let's see. Where was I? TMNT is still without a confirmed director. But it is Yeah, there you go. Recently hinted that the Wrath of the Titans, Jonathan Liebsman, would potentially helm it from Platinum Dunes again. So it's slated to arrive on December 25th, 2013. Uh-huh. And that's really all we got about it. We don't really have anything else except that I believe it's a complete reboot. So it's not associated with the old movies, I would guess, at this point.
That'd be weird.
That would be weird. Get Corey Haim back in there.
Yeah, there you go. Corey Feldman.
Corey Feldman. Isn't he dead?
No, Corey Haim is dead.
Corey Haim is dead. One of the Coreys is dead.
Yeah, Corey Haim died. Corey Feldman is still alive.
Excellent. And do you know the comic book character DC Comics Mandrake the Magician?
Yeah.
Warner Brothers is planning to bring him to the big screen.
Cool.
The studio is developing a feature based on the comic strip character whose origins date back to 1934, where he was created by Lee Falk, who also created the Phantom. Cool. Mandrake is a specialist in hypnosis and illusion who uses his magical abilities to fight crime alongside Lothar, an African prince and one of the strongest men in the world. And I think even, like, unofficially, Mandrake the Magician is the father of Zatanna.
No. I mean, that... Zatanna's father is Zatara.
Okay. There we go. Never mind then.
Yeah.
But hey, and apparently Mandrake was, there was a... screen adaptation for like a serial back in the 30s or 40s or something like that. So, and some random news Deadline has word that P.E.S., an artist best known for his short films, is going to direct an all new feature length adaptation of The Garbage Pail Kids.
Now that's really random.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I'm all for nostalgia. I totally remember Garbage Pail Kids when they came out, but boy. I don't see that being a viable movie option.
It's just out there. I don't know. But apparently they've come. You can actually go buy Garbage Pail Kids cards again or something like that.
Oh really? Didn't know that.
I remember seeing something about it.
I remember those things were quite controversial when they came out because they were pretty fucked up.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard about the AMC theaters and the Ultimate Marvel Marathon?
Yeah. I heard about that.
So far, not slated for Kansas City, unfortunately, but they're still ironing out, saying they're still getting theaters set up for it or whatnot. But apparently on May 3rd, you can go in and watch, in order, Iron Man, Iron Man 2, The Incredible Hulk, Thor, Captain America, and then a midnight showing of The Avengers.
That's pretty neat.
And it's only it's at like $40 for the whole thing.
Well, that's cool. I own them all on Blu-ray, so...
I mean,
I know that watching the theater and watching at home aren't the same things, but I also saw all of them in the theater, so...
Yeah.
I mean, it's cool. I hope that people take advantage of it, but I'm not going to.
Mm-hmm.
I probably won't even see Avengers opening weekend. I might, but...
I don't know if I'm going to be able to see it opening weekend. That's my graduation weekend, and we got family from Baltimore coming in, so...
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. I want to see it, definitely.
Oh, sure. I'm going to see it.
Now, I spotted this kind of funny interview with Sigourney Weaver about Galaxy Quest. I know we're both big fans of that one.
Oh, yeah. It's a great movie.
Apparently, she said that the original movie was actually R-rated.
Yes.
And there's...
Yeah, they talk a lot about that on the special features of the DVD.
Yeah. And that sort of... It's floating out there somewhere, who knows, but I thought you'd get a kick out of that at least.
Oh no, I knew that. I've always hoped that would sneak it out online. It was all, you know, obvious. I mean, it's, I don't know if you know it, but it shouldn't come as any surprise to you that it was actually originally written as a start with Star Trek characters, with Shatner, with Nimoy, etc. And they then they passed on it, and so they ended up having to change it to, you know, fit this. And I really enjoy that movie. There's some good stuff in that movie.
It's a good one. And to end on the sad note, as we are prone to do, Ralph McQuarrie died. Mm. Of course, the legendary Star Wars designer of all those just beautiful paintings that you see for Star Wars died at 82. I think he died natural causes, so... He's an old man.
He was a legend.
Yeah, I mean, he did design work for Raiders of the Lost Ark, E.T., a ton of stuff. And it's sort of sad to see him go, but there you have it.
It was great that we had him at all.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, maybe we can turn this around and... maybe this is kind of sad, but at the same time, it's kind of awesome. Nobody died. That's something I never, ever, ever thought was going to happen. Looks like it's going to happen, but I never really considered it because it's just an oddball idea. But the story headlines as Clint Eastwood's family to star in a reality show, Mrs. Eastwood and Company, featuring a cappella group.
Yeah, I saw that. There's no way we're going to see Clint Eastwood in that.
Well, he's going to be on it, just not very much. It's going to focus on his wife and daughters, but he said he will be in it occasionally. I'm looking at the article right now. It says, let me see if I can find it.
He'll be in there punching a cameraman.
The director will only appear occasionally in the E-series, which will focus on his wife and daughters. It's Clint fucking Eastwood, man.
He'll only appear beating up one of the cameramen or something.
That'd be cool. Like, spilling his shit or sitting, not using a coaster on his piano or some crazy shit like that.
Yes.
But yeah, I thought that was just kind of funny shit.
The occasional glare from him is it'll be good.
Mm-hmm. He's a scary dude. He's a scary dude. And he's also a director.
He is also a director. He's also a
two-time Academy Award-winning director.
He is. He's a fantastic director.
And a Ruth Fassbender. But I was trying to do a very, very, very ham-fisted segue there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's going to bring it into Geekly Happenings, and we will be right back with our main topic discussion with our top favorite directors of all time. Something that we've done once before. It was back on, I want to say, issue 18 or 19 of the Red Phone Zone. And what it was is we talked about our top six favorite directors of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Last time when we did it, I can do this. My list read, my number six was Steven Spielberg, number five was Clint Eastwood, number four was Ridley Scott, my number three was Michael Mann, my number two was Kevin Smith, my number one was Quentin Tarantino. And Ethan's number six was Sam Peckinpah. His number five was Ridley Scott. His number four was Tarantino. His number three was Christopher Nolan. His number two was James Cameron. And his number one was Akira Kurosawa.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we are doing this one again. I think this is the first time we are redoing a list. Like entirely redoing it.
I think so,
I might be wrong, but this is one that it was like I was saying in the intro, we do often say that, if I had this list to do over again, I would make sure to put this guy in there. But, you know, going through the shows and re-listening to all of our shows, we say that a lot about our director's list. Mm-hmm. I mean, it occasionally comes up on some of the other ones, but the director's one is the one that keeps coming up again and again and again and again and again. And the way that I did it last time was I just did with working directors. You know, they had to still be working and they had to still be living.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was pretty easy for me to do this again. I did. There will be some of the same directors that I had last time, but there's also some of them I kicked off. Mm-hmm. And some of them I kicked off, and I didn't kick them off just for deceased directors or retired, but just for people that have since really caught my eye since then. But yeah. this is a cool list because of the fact that looking at directors and, you know, finding your favorite directors from my perspective, it's kind of like the training wheels of being a movie fan. It's really like the first thing that you do when you start really, really getting into cinema is you start noticing, oh, this guy directed, you know, this movie and this movie, and they have, you know, these things in common. And it's really kind of interesting when you look at it, because of the fact that, you know, obviously, you know, you look at a director like Clint Eastwood or something, you know, he's got, you know, very, very different sensibilities. Yeah, he can make a movie like Unforgiven, and he can turn around and make a fantastic movie like Gran Torino, let's say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're completely different. They're, you know, they're set 100 years apart. But at the same time, you can still feel the same sensibilities go through, because it's a director that has, you know, such a solid signature that you can really feel it. So it's really kind of cool to do that. And I do, and I, there's a lot of times where an actor can get me into a movie theater, but it's the director that will get me into a movie theater a lot quicker than any actor. Because my favorite, to be fair, my favorite directors have done some crappy movies sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when it comes to an actor, I mean, the best actor in the world is at the mercy of the director.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I've always been fascinated by actors. Mm-hmm. Actors, but directors as well. Is there any reason? I mean, I know that it is me that just kind of threw it out here because our last person couldn't do it, but is there any reason why you see this list as needing a second go over?
Well, we've constantly, throughout the last, you know, over the last, you know, 40, 50, 60, however many shows we've done since then, we've constantly said, oh yeah, I forgot about that guy. It's, you know, he'd be on my list if we did that again. When I sat down to do this, I decided to, I mean, I included dead and non-working directors when I did it. And so my list has changed a little bit, and I actually reordered it a little bit and took some guys off of it or put guys at the bottom of it because I knew you were going to talk about them or hope that you'll talk about them. That sort of thing. And I while going through and making this list, I just sort of came to the realization that a lot of times, even if these guys do some bad movies or movies that are just awful, generally, I wanted to put directors on here that I generally, for the most part, like, at least like their attitude or like the way that they make movies or the movies that they do make that are good, that are, you know, definitely some of my favorite films out there. So.
Oh, sure.
But I mean, there's a few directors on my list that have done some awful movies on my list that I don't like at all.
Me too.
Just because you like the director, or even like the like an actor, mm-hmm. doesn't mean that you're always going to like everything they do. And I think this list is going to really, really show that. And I put ones on here that I thought, you know, it's like in retrospect, looking at it, it's like, okay, personal feelings aside about this director, this guy has done a lot. And I might not dig what he does, right. Some of the stuff that he's done. I might have issues with it, or other people out there might have issues with it. And I want to talk about it because I think they're really good.
I definitely have some on my list that are controversial, that some people really don't like. Some people, you know, downright hate some of these people. Well, I mean, mm-hmm. I'm sure that everybody on my list is going to have a hater on there somewhere.
Yeah.
I do definitely have some controversial choices on here.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, you want to just get going on this?
I'm fine with it, sure.
Okay. What's your number six?
My number six is he's obviously a director that's done, I think, a wide variety of stuff. For the most part, I really dig his science fiction work, but he has done arguably some of the worst movies of all time. One of the worst movies of all time. It's Paul Verhoeven.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of RoboCop, obviously, and I like his Total Recall, and I like, you know, I find I really like his science fiction work, like Starship Troopers, etc.
I didn't really like Starship Troopers.
Mainly because he's kind of an unapologetic, you know, crazy, Verhoeven, he's German or Dutch or something, I think he's Dutch.
Yeah.
A crazy Dutch guy that has a heck of a lot of energy and sort of jumps around like a maniac, and really sort of boils down to me is in RoboCop, it's sort of that sensibility and that in-your-face, over-the-top violence that he likes to portray. It gets him a lot of trouble, obviously. But he has turned
he's
out
Dutch.
Some... Yes, oh, he's Dutch, good. He has done some fantastic work, I think, in RoboCop being, I think, his my favorite of his stuff. But then he's also turned around and you know, he does awful movies like, you know, I believe he did Showgirls, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
Yes. So
he was the first person to actually show up and accept a Razzie.
Mm-hmm. And
in person.
Therein sort of lies one of the reasons I really like the guy. Is he has a good sense of humor about himself. He doesn't take himself too seriously. He's out to make movies that are really. He's not ashamed that they are what they are. He does try to make a little bit of a statement, but ultimately he's trying to make entertainment.
Yeah.
And I think he really thrived in the 80s and a little bit into the 90s.
Basic Instincts, Starship Troopers, RoboCop, Total Recall. Mm-hmm. He did Hollow Man, right?
Yeah, I believe he did. Yeah,
I liked Hollow Man. It was not good, mm-hmm. but I still kind of enjoyed it. It was okay.
Excellent. Well, he's my number six, and I want to iterate that's. The order listing on mine is not. I don't want to say that it's not 100% done. I'm not going to change the order I put him in here as. But I'm not saying like I like Paul Verhoeven more than you know this guy because of anything. It's just the way I ended up putting it on the list. So.
Yep. Well, I would say that Paul Verhoeven is something of a controversial choice, especially with the Razzies making Showgirls, which is. Probably one of the most poorly received movies that I can remember in the last 20 years or so.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, you're right. You know, he has made some good movies. But my number six is a controversial one as well. Mm-hmm. And it's one that we actually talked about last time. But my number six, and I would like to think that you wouldn't be surprised about it, Ethan, but it's George Lucas.
I wouldn't be surprised because he's my number five, so...
Okay, and it's funny because I don't know if you've ever even listened to that show, but we got down to, we were about ready to spit out our number ones, and, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, and who are going to be our, you know, our honorable mentions? And then Shay said something about, what about George Lucas? And you're like, no, fuck George Lucas. And I'm all like, well, no, I don't know, I'm not going to say fuck George Lucas, but, you know, the more I get to think about it, he's directed, five movies? Six? I don't remember. He directed THX-1138, American Graffiti, the original Star Wars, and the prequel, so that's six movies.
Right.
I like all those movies.
The thing I like about him is he has his fingers in so many other things, mm-hmm. and in so many other movies, presence there, yeah.
He's a producer, that's probably what he's best at. He is mm-hmm. probably best at being a producer. I mean, last time we were all like, he's a shitty director. I don't think he's a shitty director. I think if we're going to call him a shitty anything, he's a shitty writer. But
yeah.
At the same time, I still like all of his movies. So I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to jump on that fuck George Lucas bandwagon because mm-hmm. I like his movies. I especially like his stories.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good storyteller. He's not necessarily a good writer, but like the Indiana Jones movies, those are his stories, and I really like those. Star Wars, you know, those are his stories. You know, he obviously brought in, you know, with the original trilogy, he did bring in other screenwriters, and he did with the prequel trilogy as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, you can say what you will about him, and everybody fucking feels free to, but I like the movies he makes. He makes good movies. I really, really like American Graffiti a lot. It's mm-hmm. a really cool. I mean, I know you don't like it, but it's. I really dig the music. I love the nostalgia of it. It's one of the most nostalgic movies ever made. THX-1138 was weird, but it was fucking sci-fi if I've ever seen it.
Oh yeah.
And then, you know, you just can't. I don't think it's fair to dismiss him, which is what happens to everybody in. Well, with almost everybody these days. I think he's a living legend, and unfortunately he's the butt of a joke, but I still love him. So that's why I picked him for my number six.
Yeah, and I put him at my number five for a lot of the same reasons. One of the reasons I have sort of really grown to... I really want to take back that comment of fuck George Lucas, you know.
Yeah, I do too, and that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I want to...
Say fuck George Lucas, but Shay said, "What about George Lucas?" And you're like, "No, he's just not a good director." But you didn't say fuck George Lucas in those words, but
right. And I definitely want to sort of step back from that and say, you know, I was harsh. I regret my words. I really admire what George Lucas does, just from a standpoint of looking at him in the context of Hollywood. He's really unapologetic. He does what he wants, and and he gets
so
a lot of
fascinating about him right now.
Yeah, and he gets a lot of shit for it, and I think it's really unfair that people, you know, bitch him out for that. It's like, because, you know, he's George Lucas, raper of childhoods, and you know, it's like, ultimately, you know, this is the guy that brought us, you know, the Star Wars universe. He's the one that brought us the Indiana Jones universe, and this
Willow.
Is and Willow and some other really fun, great movies that are out there that might not be, you know, Academy Award material, but they're still fun movies that I think have completely entrenched themselves in pop culture since, I mean, he came out with them. You know, I mean, you cannot argue that Star Wars is not an integral part of pop culture. You know, period.
People do
argue that. Well, they're I entirely disagree with them.
We've had a guest on this show that does so and did it mm-hmm. with us. But you know, it's all right.
No, and I disagree with him too. So, that Star Wars and Indiana Jones, I think the impact of George Lucas is just I think obvious. And if you're that successful, you're obviously going to get targeted by various people. So. But that's why I put him at my number five. So.
I also think he's a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of people like to say, you know, this or that about him, but the dude's gonna give away half of his wealth when he dies to I don't remember, but the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has the I don't remember what it's called, some sort of I want to say a wealth pledge where people pledge to give away a majority of their money upon their death or whatever. And in order to do so, they have to, they write out a letter. They say where they want it to go. And on his, he says that, you know, he's going to give it up for educating kids and mm-hmm. history and stuff like that. And I did, you know, and this is one of those fucking things that just drove me nuts was, one of the things that people were complaining about when he said that is that I guarantee you that, you know, he's only giving away 51% of his wealth.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow. So 51% of $4 billion is still a fuckload of money.
Yeah.
You know, even if he is only giving away 51%, which, you know, might be true, might not, I don't know. It's still a good thing to do. I mean, and he's a good dude, and I also really like his movies. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's, you know, I mean, I've always been, you know, very, I've always been the biggest Lucas apologist in the world. But at the same time, last time when we did this, I did not bring him up, and I should have. And I realized that this time around because say what you will about the guy, I like all of his movies.
Yeah. So, I agree. So, and I've explained my.
No, don't say what you will about the guy. You're done. Quit talking shit about George Lucas. So,
exactly.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned.
And you know, the prequel trilogy is what it is, and I've grown to appreciate it. I mean, I can't say that I love the prequel trilogy, but I still
I like it.
I can enjoy it. So
I absolutely like it.
I love
parts of it.
I definitely admire it for because he did what he wanted to do, and he didn't care, you know, what other people were saying, and I think that's really admirable. So.
So he's your number five, so we can put it right down to my number five.
Yes.
And my number five, now this is a list that's actually pretty fluid, although George Lucas was my solid number six, my ten is set, my one I think is set. But my number five, I'm going to go with, wasn't on my list last time, but we've talked an awful lot about them. It's the Joel and Ethan Coen.
Mm-hmm.
I love them as directors. We did an entire show dedicated to them with McGee. six months ago, something like that. But we talked an awful lot about them. I don't want to, you know, go over something that we've gone over and over again, but they just have such a unique body of work, and I like every movie they've made ever made except for Intolerable Cruelty, and I do want to see it a second time. So I just, you know, if you want to hear my thoughts on them, go back, find our Coen Brothers episode,
mm-hmm.
and that'll give you an hour's worth of my thoughts about them. But I love them, and they're great, great, great directors. So, Ethan, who's your number four?
Now, we mentioned we were going to get into some controversial picks here, and I think this is probably the most controversial pick on my list.
Michael Bay, right?
It is Michael Bay, number four.
I figured he was going to show up on there for you.
And the reason he's on there is again, he's not doing Academy Award winning movies. He's not doing any of that. But he knows exactly what movies he's making. He knows.
I will say that for 95-80% of the time, but you know goddamn good and well that when he made Pearl Harbor, he thought he was going to get an Oscar for that.
I definitely concede that, with Pearl Harbor being the exception to this.
Yeah.
But I think he learned his lesson from that.
Yeah,
and going forward from that,
I think he himself is a douchebag. I don't care.
Sure.
I don't care about that, but I do like some. I like some of his movies a lot, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, and I think moving forward from Pearl Harbor, I think he's had this great attitude of, you know, screw you guys. I'm making a movie with giant robots beating the crap out of each other, and it's going to make a mountain of money, and people are going to bitch at me and say that it's awful, it's insipid, it's stupid, but you know what? Millions of people really like it, so I'm going to keep doing it. And
well, that's exactly it. I mean, like, Transformers 3 and 4 have kind of become a butt of a joke on this show. I mean, it's entirely me. I do it. But people go see them.
Yeah.
And I think I said it when we said that when they're making Transformers 4, I think our guess
is
why the fuck are they
Transformers 3. Their 4 hasn't been made yet.
That's what I said, that when we said that they are going to make it, I think our guest said why. And I said, dude, I haven't seen them, but I would make Transformers 4 right now.
If I could.
Those movies make fucking money. A lot of them.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, it's funny. People like talking about Michael Bay, and they'll talk those movies. They'll talk, like The Rock and Con Air.
Armageddon. No, he didn't do Con Air.
No, he didn't do Con Air. That was West.
Yeah, Simon West.
West. But,
Armageddon was his other big one, yeah.
But you know, I always wonder why people don't talk more about Bad Boys. I like both of those movies.
Well,
especially the first one.
You know, and he sets out to make when he does a movie like, you know, Bad Boys, Armageddon, you know, Transformers, whatever. He's setting out to make a Saturday night popcorn, flashy, over the top action movie that, you know, has amazing effects and huge, gigantic explosions, and is such, you know, fundamentally a glossy Michael Bay movie. That I think some people really resent that he gets to play with these big toys and they don't.
He's very much a next generation George Lucas.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I totally agree. And
I don't think he's as talented, but I think that it's a good analogy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And by no means am I saying he's better than George Lucas or he's better than et cetera, et cetera. He
makes fun movies. I'm not going to say he doesn't.
Yeah, and entirely that's what I want to go for is he's making these fun movies, and that's why I like the guy, and that's why I generally like what he does.
He directed that movie sucked. I'm sorry.
The Island. I never saw that one.
That one sucked.
I heard bad things about it.
Yep. Huh, I'll be damned. But no, I just don't. He doesn't make movies that are made for me, so I don't really care one way or the other. And so I don't have a problem with him picking them. But I kind of gave a little bit of thought to your list. I mean, not a ton, but a little bit. And that was one I assumed was going to show up on your list.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to say that I'm going to try to move most of the people from my last list to the back of my list, so we can actually talk about new people this time around.
Yeah, that was one of the things I wanted to do. I failed in a few cases, but because I really like certain directors. But that's sort of why, you know, Michael Bay made it up here on the list, is because, you know, I think he gets a bad rap.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that he's a very successful movie maker. Mm-hmm. And I think he's very much a movie maker. He's not a filmmaker.
Oh yeah, and I don't think he'd call himself a filmmaker. You know?
Probably not. I'd hope not.
Yeah, I'd hope not.
And for all I know, the guy might be a jerk, but he makes good movies. So my next one is an oddball one because he's only directed not a whole lot of movies, but it is Edgar Wright, the director of Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the upcoming End of the World. He worked on Space, which is a fantastic series if you haven't seen it. But he's a director that he falls under the guise of, I will absolutely see anything that this guy makes.
Mm-hmm.
So far, I've liked all of his movies. I mean, I can say that about Joss Whedon also, because he's directed a movie. But at the same time, Edgar Wright has made very different movies, and in one sense, in another sense, no. Because he's got a different background for each one of his movies, like be it Zombie Apocalypse, 80s action movie, you know, a la Michael Bay, or, you know, or this weird-ass indie comic book. But they had that same sensibility going through them with the close-knit UK beer buddies. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I really like his movies, and obviously, you know, you can't talk about them without talking about Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. I mean, those three go together very well.
Oh, yeah.
So I picked him. I like his movies a lot.
Oh, no, he's my number eight. I really enjoy our Edgar Wright stuff, and he really hasn't directed that much.
He's been doing a lot of writing and producing lately,
yeah,
I noticed.
But in a previous episode, you know, you've said, you know, fuck Cary Grant for being so awesome.
Yeah.
For me, it's fuck Edgar Wright for being so awesome. I mean, the guy has talent.
He is pretty damn awesome.
He has so much talent. I mean, he's a good director. He's a really good writer. And it's like, man, you know, this guy's just
by all accounts, he's a really nice guy, too. He responds to tweets.
I know.
On Twitter. It's awesome.
So
Simon Pegg doesn't respond to tweets.
Oh, he's kind of busy.
Yeah, he's really busy, really busy.
But no, Edgar Wright, totally awesome guy. I love Shaun of the Dead. I love Hot Fuzz.
Oh, yeah.
So
I think that we're almost. Yeah, I need to get Hot Fuzz on Blu-ray. I don't have that one, but I did finally pick up Shaun of the Dead on Blu-ray, and I've watched it a couple of times.
Nice,
some good shit.
And you know, Scott Pilgrim really wasn't for me, but the direction in it I thought was amazing. I mean, I would definitely not argue against the direction in that movie.
I'm going to say it was made for you, but it just didn't, it rubbed you the wrong way.
It just didn't click with me, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally made for people, actually, it's probably made for people more like his age. I think he's, I don't know, let's look up how old he is. He's probably early 40s.
You're gonna find out he's like our age or something.
No, he's definitely older than us. 74, so that means he's
he's 74 years old.
No, he's born. He's 37. So he's like 5 years older than us, and so that makes sense. But you know, there was very much like that whole 8-bit Nintendo generation stuff going through there, and so he would have been, yeah, you know, he would have been like 10, 11 when the first Nintendo came out, where we were 5 or 6. And yeah, okay, very cool. It's I do like Shaun of the Dead, and we I think it showed up on our guilty pleasure. I'm sorry, not Shaun of the Dead. Scott Pilgrim. Mm-hmm. I think it showed up in my guilty pleasures.
It did, yes.
And you know, that was something I said about it was, you know, despite the fact that I cannot stand Michael Cera, that is very true. I just really like this movie because of the Edgar Wright elements in it. So,
I should probably watch it again to see if it sits better. So
you have it?
I do. I've got a DVD copy here for some reason. I think somebody left it here.
I got the nifty Blu-ray if you ever want to borrow it with all the cool shit on it that it has on the Shaun of the Dead and the Hot Fuzz stuff. I mean, it's got tons of shit on it. It's a cool Blu-ray.
But, I did really like Kieran Culkin in it. He was hysterical.
He was great. Yeah, he was really funny. If I remember right, that movie showed up on the Bagged and Boardcast end of the year as a couple of their number ones that year.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right, yeah.
It's a really good movie. All right, so that brings us down to your number three.
All right, my number three was on my previous list, and I can't take him off of this list. It's James Cameron.
Yeah, he's great.
You know, it's another one of say what you will about the guy, but
is he a jerk, but he makes fantastic movies.
I wouldn't go as far as to call him a jerk. I think he's a bit stuck up. I think he's a bit pretentious.
Man, we're splitting hairs here now.
That's true.
My thing about it was when you hear about his early days of the Terminator, he was acting like a fucking tyrant on set. And this is before he was motherfucking James Cameron.
Yeah.
And so I think he's just a dick, which is fine. I'm a dick.
But he's a dick with talent, you know?
He's a very talented dick, absolutely.
And I came to a realization the other day because I was I sat down and watched Titanic with Beth. And I'm looking at it.
Damn, that's a well-made movie.
It is a well directed just amazingly.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here just, and I start rolling over it in my head going, what movies has he directed? And I'm going, okay, I own that one, and I own that one, and I own that one. And I'm like, look back at his filmography as a director, and I'm like, I own all movies except his first one, Piranha 2 The Spawning, you know? Uh-huh. And I'm like, okay, that says something here. Because I own Terminator, you know, Terminator 2, Aliens, and you know, it's talk about some iconic absolutely fantastic, wonderful movies. Terminator, Terminator 2, and Aliens, you know. I say what you will about Avatar. I mean, people have a love-hate relationship with it, I think, but it's the direction in it and the technical aspect of it is just amazing. And
you and I've never understood
what's that?
The Titanic hate.
Yeah,
never,
you know,
got that.
Beth and I talked about it. Now I'm guilty of it. Guilty of it myself. It's one of those that it was popular to hate it, but it was popular to love it because you know, 80% of the people that loved it, and it's one of those things of enough people keep telling you, oh, it's a great movie, I love it, oh, I love movie, I love Titanic, blah, blah, blah. You get jaded towards it, and they're like, oh, screw it, I'm tired of hearing about it, I don't want to see it, I hate this thing. And,
Titanic, I saw it when it came out, mm-hmm. I thought it was a good movie, I was, what would I have been, 17, 18, 19, something like that when it mm-hmm. came out, and I do remember getting kind of pissed that it won the Best Picture Oscar.
Yeah,
because I wanted whatchamacallit to win.
LA Confidential. Yeah,
and you know, granted, I still think that LA Confidential is probably the better movie.
Oh, yeah.
I think a 32-year-old Aaron would have known goddamn well that Titanic deserved to win.
Yes, and or was going to win. Yeah,
I think it kind of deserved to win. I mean, it was a really. I mean, it was. I mean, don't get me wrong. I fucking loved L.A. Confidential. You're not going to hear me say wrong about it.
But
frickin' Titanic made a golden era Hollywood movie in 1998 or 97 or whatever that movie came
97.
Out. And
that yeah.
is so rare. It's such a, oh, yeah. it's such a good movie.
And it... I looking back, I would say it definitely deserves Best Director. Because he directed the hell out of that, and he did a fantastic job doing it.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Then, of course, my viewpoint is jaded by my love of L.A. Confidential, and I think it's the better film, so I would want it to win Best Picture, but it didn't, and it's a moot point. We still have great movies from it. And
yeah, absolutely. My thing about it is, I do think Titanic is the better film, but I mm-hmm. like L.A. Confidential better. It's just me. It's my own sensibilities. It's what I like.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I mean, the Oscar and my sensibilities very, very, very rarely. You know, sync up. They did this year. It's like the mm-hmm. first time in I don't know how long, but it's a great movie. I really like. I thought Titanic was a really well made movie. Mm-hmm. And James Cameron is an awesome director. I've never said he was, and I've always said he's a jerk. But that doesn't matter. I don't care if somebody's a jerk or not. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I was lackluster about Avatar. I am really not too keen on the sequels, but.
Mm-hmm.
I don't blame anybody for making them. It's the number one movie of all time.
Yeah, and I was absolutely flabbergasted to find that Titanic is not on Blu-ray yet.
No, it's going to come out with the 3D Blu-ray.
Yeah, it's coming out with the release, the anniversary release, yes. But I was Beth and I were out at various places.
It took forever for it to come out on DVD.
Mm-hmm. Well, Beth and I were out, and we actually found a copy of the 3-disc special collector's edition DVD for $12, and we picked it up. Right. Yeah. And I was like, well, how much is the Blu-ray? And I was like, wow, there isn't one yet. And that just kind of baffles me a little bit. I would expect Fox to have put that thing out because it being at the time, the highest grossing movie of all time. I think Fox would have put that thing out.
In 1997, yeah.
But
you need to remember that, you know, we just got Star Wars on Blu-ray. We don't have Indiana mm-hmm. Jones on Blu-ray. They're trying to do these things right.
What I'm saying is when Blu-ray first came out, I'm surprised it wasn't one of the catalog titles that Fox dumped out, because I'm sure it would have sold.
You know what? I think that I bet, and you know, I don't know. It's entirely speculation on my part, but I'm sure that James Cameron has complete control over it.
That's got to be the way, yeah. That's got to be the way that it is. He is a very controlling director, and but the thing is, he turns out such good stuff. And it's another one of those damn him for being talented because he's good
he's very talented.
Yeah, and you know, you get such great movies out of him and such iconic things like Terminator and Aliens, and I love the guy's work. I had to put him back on my list. I was like, I can't not have him on here. So there you go, James Cameron, and a long winded explanation, there you go.
You don't need it. I think he's very talented. My number three My number three is one that should not come as a surprise. He did not show up on my list last time because of the whole dead thing. But it's Charles Chaplin. Duh. Mm-hmm. I loved every movie he made. He did not make a movie that I didn't like, period. A lot of people like to talk shit on Monsieur Verdot. I think that was a great movie. I think that I've talked about Charlie Chaplin on this podcast before, right?
Yes.
I love him
once or twice.
Yeah, I love him as a director. I just got the Great Dictator Blu-ray, the Criterion mm-hmm. Blu-ray, and I devoured it. And it was, you know, hours and hours and hours and hours, and it had three different commentary tracks. And I devoured that thing in like a day and a half. Nice. I mean, I just ate it up. And now I'm gonna get a hold of the Modern Times one and do the same thing, and the Circus and do the same thing. And I like the way that he directed. I think I've talked about it on the podcast before. I've definitely talked about it off the podcast with you before, is the skating scene in Modern Times. Right. I still don't know how the fuck they did that. To those of you that don't know what we're talking about, there's this little part in Modern Times when Charlie Chaplin and his character, the Tramp, is roller skating blindfolded to pretty much to show off for his girlfriend. And he goes and he starts doing these really long loops, and he's going from one room to the next room. Well, before he didn't look in the next room when he first started skating, and so he's just out in like the main room, and it turns out that there's like this big ledge, and he is like going right up to the edge of that ledge and putting his feet over, and at times it looks like there's three of his skates are going over, or three of the wheels on his skates are actually going over the ledge, and he's not going over. And I have no idea how they did that.
Yeah.
And I have two answers. One is he really did it, which wouldn't surprise me, but it would terrify me at the same time. And the other thing would be some sort of matte painting. I mean, I don't know. I have no idea.
That's the only other, yeah.
It was fascinating. I mean, I could do it with After Effects now. It'd be easy. But, you know, back in the day, what was that movie, 32, something like that?
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot. And he did a lot of really cool stuff. I mean, in the movie Chaplin, directed by Richard Attenborough, they showed the whole scene where he shut down production for days and days and days because he couldn't figure out how to convey that the blind woman felt that he was, or thought that he was wealthy without him talking, because he was, you know, he was very stubbornly holding on to the silent pictures, like the, you know, silent movies, you know, like, well, when we're into sound. And it was just fun seeing that process about how he decided that, you know, obviously it had to be hearing the sound of a car door slamming. And I've also read his autobiography. It's out of print now, and it pisses me off because I want to read it again, and it was a fascinating read. I think he's a great director, and I loved his movies, so he's my number three.
That's awesome. I haven't seen Chaplin in so long. Gosh.
I admire everything that he made.
Mm-hmm.
I need to get me a Tramp costume so I can be in for Halloween.
You do.
Cool. What's your number two?
My number two is another guy that was on my previous list, and I'll just come out and say it's Ridley Scott. I love this guy. I he's done some movies that I don't like. I'm not a big fan of Legend. For the most part, and, you know, his most recent Robin Hood was okay.
It was lackluster. There's cool shit about it.
Yeah, and I haven't seen all of the movies that Ridley Scott has done, but for the most part, the ones that I've seen that I really love, I really freaking love, obviously.
I don't know for a fact that I've seen all of his movies, but every movie I can think of that he made, I've seen. I cannot think of a movie that he's made that I haven't seen.
Yeah, and I can definitely
see The Duelist?
Yes, I've seen The Duelist.
I really like that.
Well, and the thing I love about him is just the preciseness and the sort of the artistic approach he has to the movie, that it's so tight and so, it feels such like a well-executed machine. You know, you get great hits out of him like Alien and Blade Runner, and I think Black Hawk Down is a fantastic movie. I enjoyed American Gangster. He does some hit and miss things, you know, like Hannibal. I didn't like Hannibal that much.
Hannibal was way too overproduced, I thought.
Yeah,
there's just too many goddamn special effects in it for me, for my taste. But
yeah, And we've talked about the whole unapologetic thing, and I think
haven't seen Body of Lies. I didn't know he did that.
I haven't seen that one either, actually. Oh wait, no, Body of Lies. That's the one with Russell Crowe and Leonardo DiCaprio, right?
Yeah,
I have seen that one.
Leonardo
it was okay.
DiCaprio's in that? Sure is. Fuck, I didn't even know about this movie. Yeah.
I did see that. I saw that in theaters. It's all right. It's not bad.
I'll check it out. I just didn't know about it.
But he does, you know, he hit and miss stuff. But the thing I can always say about it is his direction is spot on, and it, you know, he has such a precise preciseness about his movies and a preciseness about his directing that I devour. I not to mention the extra features that he puts on his discs are just. I love them, and and you and I both devour extra features on DVD sets, and
he's one of those, you know, praise Jesus, Ridley Scott exists because of the special features on his DVD.
Yes, oh God, yes.
Jesus Christ, he directed Someone to Watch Over Me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. I've seen it. I didn't realize it.
Black Rain. That's another one. Yeah. I mean, he's done a lot of movies, and some movies that I look back and go, he directed that. Like Thelma and Louise is not one that I would expect him to direct. And then, you know, when you watch the movie, you...
1492 was a stinker.
I haven't seen that one, so...
Gerard Depardieu, it wasn't cool.
Yes. But like Thelma and Louise, you know, I see... You hear he directed that, you go, really? And you watch it and go, okay, I can see that. Because you definitely know when you're watching a Ridley Scott movie, and because there's lots of smoke, generally. But I just love the way this guy does movies, and I'm so stoked for Prometheus this year.
I'm very much
looking forward to that movie. And Ridley Scott does a movie, I will pretty much go see it.
I will. So somehow Body of Lies just snuck by me. I had no idea. I'm not sure I even heard of it.
No, so I did see in theaters. I remember seeing the trailers for it and going, this is looks okay. And then it said directed by Ridley Scott, and I was like, all right, I gotta go now. So, I mean, and I think that's a definite marker there for how much I like the guy.
I'm looking at his filmography, and the only thing that he directed that I haven't seen is Body of Lies, and I did not do that on purpose. I mean, there are directors that go out of my way to see all their stuff, like Chaplin, but Ridley Scott, it just happened because of I like the kind of movies he makes, so very cool. Right. He was high on my list last time, and he is, I think he's number 7. Yeah, he's number 7 on my list this time. But, you know, I talked an awful lot about him last time, so I left him off. So we're down to my number 2. And my number 2 is the only one that showed up on my list last time. He's the only one that showed up. Well, no, he is the only one that showed up on my list last time. He's the one I can't leave off. It's Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
I adore Quentin Tarantino. He's another one of those, say what you will about the guys, but I love his fucking movies.
He's number 10 on my list just because I knew you were going to talk about him. I love Pulp Fiction and I love Inglourious Basterds. I think those are fantastic movies.
You know, it's like people like to talk about, you know, put his movies in order, and it's kind of tough, but I would probably say off the top of my head that I think that Reservoir Dogs is probably his least great movie, but I fucking love Reservoir Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But I also really like Jackie Brown, a lot of people don't. I really like Kill Bill, despite the fact that it got really, really built up, and I really like it, but I adore Inglourious Basterds. It was a movie I really, really dug the first time I saw it, but I saw it, you know, when it came, like, I bought it, like, the second it came out on Blu-ray, because I thought that, Oscar boy, Christoph Waltz, like, was fucking amazing, but I did not love it as much as I do now, and it's even funnier going through and watching that movie and seeing BJ Novak from The Office in it.
Yeah.
And, it's just, I adore that movie, but I love Quentin Tarantino. I cannot wait for Django Unchained. And the guy's a fucking spaz, and I'm sure that we would not get along, but I adore his movies. He was my number 1 last time, and I had to get him on this list. I love Quentin Tarantino movies.
Mm-hmm.
He's my number 2.
Nice. So,
anything to add?
For Tarantino, I love Tarantino's work. I think you sort of hit the nail on the head with I love how you can tell how much he loves movies and he loves doing this job. You could tell that he's always going. He's always probably got this in his head of I can't believe they're paying me to do this.
Yeah,
because he just loves what he does, and it really shows in the movies he puts out, and it's the movies he produces even. And of his work, you know, I mean, you know, you hear Tarantino's doing a Western, and I'm like, I'm there because I want to see what Tarantino does.
That's such a great idea to me. But you could tell me Quentin Tarantino's doing a animated rom com, and I'd be like, I'm there.
I'll see it. Yeah.
Yeah, but in terms of the Western, that's just awesome.
Mm-hmm. And I like his sort of attitude towards it, because, you know, people ask him, it's like, well, why don't you do a comic book movie, and why don't you do this? And he's
like, I don't want to.
And his response is, you know, I love comics, I'm a big comic book dork, but if I do Green Lantern or if I do Superman, I'm going to do my Superman. I'm going to do what I want to do. He basically doesn't want to end up being hit on, you know, targeted like George Lucas and have people going, yeah, you suck, you ruined my childhood.
Yeah.
Because he's like, you know, I got enough other ideas I want to do, you know, and I'm excited about what he does.
He did a end of the year thing this past year, his like favorite movies of the year, and he took a lot of shit for it because he put Green Lantern like really, really high on there. And he had a really long explanation about why he liked Green Lantern as much as he did. And I agree with everything he said about it. You know, it didn't really make me change my mind about Green Lantern much. But dude likes some shitty movies. That's cool.
Yeah.
I also like some of the shit he's written. Like, I do really like True Romance. That's one I need to pick back up on DVD or Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one that jumps out at me that I have to own. But I do really like it.
He didn't direct that, did he? He just wrote it.
That was Ridley Scott's brother, Jesus.
Tony Scott.
Jesus, yeah. I couldn't remember his name. But yeah, he wrote that. Same with Natural Born Killers. Same with Radioland Murders. And then he, you know, started doing Reservoir Dogs, which was received relatively well. And then the world exploded and it was never the same after Pulp Fiction.
Yeah,
I've been riding the wave, and he also, I said it last time, I've said it probably more than I said anything on the show, but he was, like, Pulp Fiction and Quentin Tarantino are the reasons that I became this huge movie geek that I am.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's why I picked it for my number two.
Awesome.
So, I guess we're going to get down to our number unos.
I guess we are. And this is a director who, ashamedly was left off my list previously, and I seek the forgiveness of the world and in movie fans everywhere for not talking about Alfred Hitchcock.
I
words don't really express the impact this guy had, and the impact this guy continues to have. I think this guy has had a way of telling a story, of making a movie that appealed to wide audiences that just absolutely floored people and changed the way people saw movies. He's done some movies that I'm not that I didn't like. We could say that about all these directors, you know, like I didn't like Mr. and Mrs. Smith and things like that, but, you know.
Who directed that?
Yeah. Who directed Mr. and Mrs. Smith?
Oh, the original. Sorry.
The original.
I thought you were talking about the remake.
No.
Okay.
But
you don't like Mr. and Mrs. Smith?
Not really. No.
That's all right. I thought you were talking about the Brad Pitt one.
No.
Like that movie sucked.
yes, it did. But with Hitchcock being just this real force of nature that he was. I have a real reverence for what he did and what he brought to movies. And he has this long career from the 1930s on up to the 1970s, where he had just an amazing repertoire of movies out there. And I just absolutely love what he did. You can go around and say, you know, I didn't like this movie, I didn't like this movie, but the man changed the way movies were made. And, he is forever will be this thing that people look at and go, you know, who will be the next Hitchcock, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, entirely, that's
what
I go for.
Well, the next Hitchcock is Spielberg, I think. Mm-hmm. And I talked about it at some point. I think it was when we first started talking about the Alfred Hitchcock biopic that's coming out. But I do think it's funny that a lot of people try to put him in a different different class than I think he would consider himself in, because people mm-hmm. like to think of him as like the big time, you know, artist, you know, right. the Fellinis, the Orson Welles, the shit like that. And I don't think of him like that. I think of him as a entertainer, as a movie maker, as a guy that makes movies that are supposed to be fun or scary or visceral or something like that. And
right.
I love Hitchcock, and I didn't put him on my list, and I'm kind of wondering why I didn't, honestly. But I love Alfred Hitchcock. I think mm-hmm. I think he's one of the five greatest directors of all time.
Yeah, and I can't believe I left him off my top six last time, and I beg forgiveness, because you know, it's talk about a facepalm. The guy is just amazing, and you know, you turn around, you watch movies like Dial M for Murder and Psycho and Rear Window, and you go, North by Northwest being my personal favorites. It's you know, we are as movie fans and as people in general, we are blessed to be able to have this guy's movies to watch, because it's fun. Because I mean, you were just talking about it a couple episodes back with Psycho when you sat Rachel down to watch it.
That was awesome.
When you have that experience, it is just so great, and you know that it's all because Hitchcock was so fantastic at it. So,
he was a master filmmaker.
He was. And even in his quote-unquote mediocre attempts, he still had complete control over that camera and just really identified with telling a story, but knowing that it was a film and using every aspect of that film to tell that story. And very few directors do that.
Yeah, he's great. He's I cannot agree more. He's a fantastic director, and he's very deserving of your number one, as far as I'm concerned. But now it's time where we're going to be talking about my number one. Do you have a guess?
I don't, actually.
My number one is one that you had on your list last time, and I left him off, and I felt like a fucking dumbass, especially when you brought him up on your list. And at the same time, I liked him when you brought him up. I thought he was a good director, but he's somebody that I've gained a lot more respect for since then. Christopher Nolan. I love Christopher Nolan movies. My thing about Christopher Nolan movies is, you know, obviously, hail Nolan because he's making these great Batman movies. Wonderful. Okay, good. We're going to put those aside because I kind of like looking at his other movies more. I like we've talked to her blue in the face about the way that he is very, very, very aware of the way that film can be used. I mean, he does not just use it as simply showing a story. He does use the fact of, I think that Inception is one of the more interesting movies to come out in a long time because of the fact that it played with your perceptions, because of the fact that he's able to show, to use linear storytelling, and mm-hmm. but not even linear storytelling in that sense, because he's actually doing like a sort of in-screen three-dimensional kind of thing, so to speak, because you know, you have your different layers of dreams going on, and he did stuff like the little stuff that he did with like the music playing in the super slow motion, but you know, it's playing normal speed back in waking hours. And the fact that I love the way that movie ended, because of the fact that you often say that he's one of those directors that does not assume that you're stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And what I thought was kind of cool about it was, you know, at one point of the argument is that, you know, did or did not, was the whole thing a dream? And what I thought was kind of funny about it is, you know, Christopher Nolan was really silent about it for a good long while. He's like, you know, like his initial response was, you know, just take out of it what you will. I mean, you know, I'm not here to tell you how to think. I just want to hear to show mm-hmm. you, you know, this story. And then you know, he's since expanded on that, and he says, you know, I find it interesting that everybody's focusing on whether or not, you know, this is all a dream, because when I look at that scene, to me, the important part is, you know, dream or not, he is back with his kids.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're dealing with, like, such a deep immersion of a story like that, it doesn't really matter if he's dreaming, because
right.
you know, his dream life allowed him to get back to the place where he wanted to be, so he was able to reconcile whatever he needed to within his psyche to finally make himself be happy.
Yeah.
And that is not an angle I thought about, and it's so absolutely true. You know, obviously right now he's got The Dark Knight Rises coming out, and I hope that's great, and everything I see looks pretty cool. Last I heard, the next thing he's working on is a Howard Hughes biopic.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be interesting, because, you know, obviously we already had it with The Aviator, and it was, you know, Scorsese, you know, it was
right.
a well-made movie, but I'd be interested to see, you know, why Christopher Nolan wants to redo this idea that's been done before, and, you know, by most accounts, it was done well before. I mean, it was a good movie. I mean, we don't have to love or hate. I think it was a well-made movie, and I'm just very interested to see what he's going to do about it. My point is, I will absolutely see that movie. And it's
yeah.
not any. I didn't go see Aviator in the theater. I waited for him to go, you know. But because Christopher Nolan's making this story about this really weird dude, then I'm there. You just gave me a copy The Prestige on
yeah.
DVD. You have it on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
I love The Prestige. That's
yeah.
a movie that a lot of people don't really talk about too much, and I don't quite get it. I think that was a wonderful.
Yeah, well, it's one of those that sort of slipped under the radar, and people who have seen it go, that movie's awesome, but then they forget about it until someone goes, have you seen The Prestige? And they go, oh, that's a great movie.
What I thought was funny was a lot of people like to compare it to that The Illusionist.
Mm-hmm.
Came out right around the same time, and there's no comparison.
Yeah.
The Illusionist is what it is, but it doesn't hold a candle to Prestige. And like I said, like his first movie, Following, have you seen that one yet?
Which one?
Following.
Oh, Falling?
F-O-L-L-O-W. Following.
Following.
F-O-L-L-O-W. Yeah, that's the first movie he made.
No, I haven't actually seen that one.
That's a good movie. It's on Netflix and Hulu and all that stuff. You should check it out. But it's one of those movies that really plays with linear storytelling, and then he kicks it up a notch with Memento, and he, you know, tells a story in reverse chronological order. And then a lot of people like to give Insomnia shit, and
yeah.
don't quite get that. I liked Insomnia okay. I mean, it wasn't his greatest movie, but there's some really cool shit going on in that movie. I mean, one thing I always thought that Christopher Nolan doesn't get a lot of credit for is I think he's really good at casting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, who the hell would think of to cast Robin Williams as your psycho killer? And he's not an over-the-top, you know, Riddler kind of psycho killer. He's a really deep, methodical, silent, psychotic killer. And it's a really, really cool. I love this guy, and I think that he is probably the great white hope of the next.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a racist statement?
No.
Okay, well, he's the great white hope of this generation, because he's in his early 40s, and he's just been making great, great, great movies, and I love the guy, and anything he does, I will go see.
I totally agree, and we've, you know, I was just talking Hitchcock, and you know, Nolan, I think, is another one of those filmmakers that has such great control and is such a effective storyteller when it comes to movies that I think, especially since he's now gained the freedom that he can do pretty much what he wants after doing Dark Knight, you know, because he did Prestige and now, you know, and Inception and all that, and he turns around and, you know, I'll pretty much see whatever he does at this point, and you know, regardless of the topic, you know. He's an amazing filmmaker, and I put him up at number 9 on my list just because I knew you were going to talk about him, so I was hoping you would talk about him. Let's put it that way.
He was the main reason why I wanted to do this list over, because I had my respect for that dude has grown so much since we did
mm-hmm.
that last show, and I love him, so that's why I picked him for my number 1.
Nice.
So at this point, why don't we run down our top 10? And then we can get talking about Ruth Oz.
Excellent. Well, my number 10 was Quentin Tarantino. Number 9 is Christopher Nolan. Number 8, Edgar Wright. Number 7, Steven Spielberg. Number six, Paul Verhoeven. Number five, George Lucas. Number four, Michael Bay. Number three, James Cameron. Number two, Ridley Scott. And number one, Alfred Hitchcock.
Very excellent. Very excellent. My number 10 is one that most people don't know. You'll know, but it's Richard Lester. Mm-hmm. I like his movies. He makes really fun, good movies. My number 9 is Steven Spielberg. My number 8 is Michael Mann. My number 7 is Ridley Scott. My number 6 is George Lucas. My number 5 is Coen Brothers. My number 4 is Edgar Wright. My number 3 is Charles Chaplin. My number 2 is Quentin Tarantino. And my number 1 favorite director working right now is Christopher Nolan. Good list. I'm actually very proud of you for picking George Lucas on your list. I thought that was going to be the one that, you know, I was going to have to be, you know, defending by myself, and I was prepared, but cool. And yeah, this is a good list. Good list. Good directors, yeah. All of them. Very good directors, all of them.
Totally.
But I guess that's going to bring it into our discussion about our favorite directors of all time. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back, and we are going to name off the newest inductee into the Indomitable Order of the Son of Ruth Oz. And we are back. Well, Ethan, Ruth Oz.
Yep, Ruth Oz. It was a...
Ruth Oz. It was a long, arduous process, wasn't it?
It was. We had the voting open for, what was it, 4, 5, 6 weeks? Something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
It was a while. It was a while.
We also lost it. We actually ended up skipping a tenth... we ended up skipping a cycle... because
that's
of our
true.
Equipment problems that were happening and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we ended up leaving it up for, I think you're right, like 5, 6, 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some crazy shit going on. Who were the nominees?
Oh, yeah. The nominees were Stephen Moffat. Let's see. Let's try to go in order here. I think, Bill Murray, Stephen Moffat, Nathan Fillion, and Harrison Ford were the nominees. Mm-hmm. All fine actors or creators in their own right, you know. I mean,
yeah. All fine nominees.
Mm-hmm. All fine nominees. I think Nathan Fillion's a great guy. Harrison Ford, obviously, my pick was awesome. And Stephen Moffat is, you know, very cool because of Doctor Who and Sherlock and, you know, his really great writing work. And I really want to see the Tintin movie because he was one of the writers on it.
Came out on Tuesday on DVD.
Excellent. And then, of course, there's Bill Murray, which, love him or hate him, you know, he is Bill Murray.
And they called him Bill fucking Murray in Zombieland.
That's true. That is true. So, you know, I think the cool thing, though, about this one is in previous voting cycles, I think we've topped out about 21 votes or something like that.
Yeah.
I did a heavy campaigning. I did heavy campaigning for my nominee, and we ended up with 67 votes on this one. And yeah, I'm pretty excited at just having 67 votes for it. I thought that was really cool.
I think our voting is continuing to grow, and I got a couple of tricks up my sleeve. I'm going to hopefully get it to grow really big next time. And
cool.
It might happen, it might not, so we'll have to see what happens. I mean, kind of like a Pop Culture Movie Showdown, mm-hmm. We got a fuckload of votes on that because of Bruce Campbell.
Oh, yeah.
So,
thank you, Bruce.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Bruce.
That was very cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, why don't you run us down what happened on this?
You want me to go lowest to highest? Or how
go
do you want
to?
All right, in fourth place with just over just about 4.5% of the vote was Stephen Moffat,
okay.
Which honestly I'm surprised he got that much. Love Stephen Moffat, but he doesn't really have that name recognition.
Yeah, I love it. You know, I like his stuff a lot better. Well, I don't know him at all, mm-hmm. But you know, if the things that he's done that I'm familiar with is representative of, you know, the quality of work that he does, I think he's awesome. And, you know, I bet you Paul voted on four different computers or something like that.
Yeah, and still only got 3 votes. That's the funny part. Number three on the list was Bill Murray with just about 10.5% of the vote. Again, you know, given the other nominees, I'm not surprised that those two ended up down there. It was pretty obvious.
Honestly, I expected this to come down between Harrison Ford and Bill Murray. I thought Bill Murray was going to be the sleeper hit
I really expected it to go the way it did, and it was pretty much Nathan Fillion and Harrison Ford going at it. For the Ruthaz nod, and
maybe we should just make a blanket thing. No more fucking weed nights because they fuck shit up. No, we don't want to do that. Weed nights are awesome.
Weed nights are pretty cool. And again, I have no problems with Nathan Fillion. Him taking on a moniker of Nathan fucking Fillion, but unfortunately that will not happen, because Harrison Ford, Nathan Fillion came in with just over 40% of the vote versus Harrison Ford's 45%. So,
we got Harrison fucking Ford now.
Yeah, eking it out, my nominee of Indiana Jones, Han Solo, and Jack Ryan. Embodied by the great actor of Harrison Ford, comes out as Harrison fucking Ford. I'm thrilled that he managed to beat Nathan Fillion. Very nice. Yeah.
Now I've done a pretty good job about being unbiased through this whole thing. My vote would have been for Harrison Ford. I did not vote, but my vote would have been for Harrison Ford because. I like all those people, but to me, it's just I like Harrison Ford much better than those other people.
Right.
I think he's great, and I'm actually amazed that it was such a close victory. Honestly, now I have my theory behind why Nathan Fillion did as well as he did. Other than the fact that he's awesome, I think that Beth had a 0-hour charge to try to get him to win, and just didn't quite get there.
Probably.
And I still think that's why Joss Whedon won.
But to his defense, I put Harrison Ford. I campaigned for that. So I mean, I went out on Twitter, and I went out on Facebook, finding all the little fan pages I could about for Harrison Ford, being like, you need to go vote here, and I managed to drum up enough votes to get him the title, because I didn't want to sit here and you know, eat crow about, you know, Nathan Fillion taking the title, because I have no problem with him. I think I'm fine with him getting another nomination and probably winning next time. But
he can't next time.
Well, yeah,
remember there's two.
Right, in his next attempt, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted Harrison Ford to get the recognition first, because I think that's only appropriate.
I agree. Harrison Ford is a living legend, and I think he's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And Indiana Jones, the King of the Crystal Skull, fucking rocks. Mm-hmm. And
so does
all. I like all of his movies. Well, pretty much all of his movies. But congratulations, Ethan. You won this round.
Thank you.
So you know what that means, don't you?
That means I have to host the next one.
Yep.
Alrighty, I can do that.
So it's all up to you to be setting this stuff up with the Bag and Board Boys or anybody else that you want to bring in.
Sure.
And part of, I don't know if I've told you this, but part of the whole getting to be the moderator, the host of the next time around is that gives you the opportunity to add to or amend the rules.
Okay.
But I will say this. The one concrete rule is they have to be alive.
Yes.
I don't think we should open that up.
No,
I don't want Sir Isaac fucking Newton in here or something like that, because he was awesome.
Yes.
But, you know, he's just not quite Ruthaz material.
No. And I'm fine with that. So, I'm fine with that. So,
yeah, feel free to do whatever you do and just let me know. And I already know who my nominee for next time is, and I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to win. Because I know how this shit works now. So, no, I think it's great. Harrison fucking Ford. Long time coming. Congratulations, sir. You earned it, buddy.
Excellent.
You earned it. So, we'll probably be getting that stuff up on the website and throw out some tweets and Twitters and shit like that and let people know. But I don't know what we're doing next week, and we'll probably get it figured out before next week. But, hey, you know what? Next time we do a show, I'm going to be a married man.
Yes, you will be. You're getting married this Sunday, aren't you?
Yep.
Awesome. Yep. I will be there.
And it's like I said, me too. it's like I told Rachel, you know, I mean, we just didn't want to go overboard and spend a shitload of money on a wedding. We've both done the wedding thing before. We want to get married, high five, go home, and watch some Walking Dead. That's pretty much what we're going to do.
Awesome.
Should be a good day. Should be a good day. But I don't have anything else unless you do, Ethan.
I do not. I do not. I can't think of anything else to talk about.
Me neither. So I guess until next week, I'm Aaron.
I'm Ethan.
And Harrison fucking Ford, dude.
Damn right.
Damn right.